is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 697. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by Tracy Schultz as my guest co-host.
Hi, it's good to be here.
And we also have future co-op programmer Amarantha De La Cruz, and you are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3, streaming live at koop.org. Stay with us.
Step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
It is Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. On the show today, we have Ground Floor Theater and their show, The Last 5 Years. And later on, we'll be talking to the way off-Broadway players out in Leander and their show, which is called A Christmas Carol, if you've ever heard of that. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, and Madison, Wisconsin. Stick with us. Tracy Schultz.
Yeah, hi.
How long has it been since that you have been on the air with us? It's been a while.
It's been a couple of years.
Well, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, there was the pandemic, and there's still the pandemic.
Still the pandemic.
And then today. And so yeah. It's happy to be here.
Well, yeah. And so Tracy was many times with us as co-host and co-host and has been here forever. Tell folks about your show that you do here at Co-op Radio.
We used to be
neighbors
on the same day. It's like next to each other, but I'm on Thursdays, 1 to 2 p.m. And it's an interview show. Get a chance to talk with musicians, a lot of musicians, but some events that happen here in town.
And that show's called What's New.
It's called What's New, 1 to 2 p.m. Central Time.
Yeah. What's New?
Yeah. Well, what's new is like this week, I did an interview this morning with Bonnie Whitmore, who's a great singer-songwriter here in town. And I also did an interview by phone with Lily Hyatt. And so that's going to be on the show tomorrow.
Now, you talk about Bonnie Whitmore, but you know, I've worked with James Whitmore.
James Whitmore.
Yeah, the very, very famous actor.
He's
no longer living. And he was married to, a fun fact, he was married to Audra Lindley. Do you know who she was? I think she's probably passed by now.
I know that name.
She was Mrs. Roper.
Yes.
In the Ropers. Anyway, I did a show called In the Sweet By and By with them that was headed to Broadway. I was 25 years old, the youngest production stage manager in the universe, but we did not make it to Broadway.
Oh.
We closed in Florida. Amarantha De La Cruz.
Da Cruz.
Oh, you know, I changed a letter and added a word.
Everyone does that.
Well, because I think it sounds cool.
Yeah, no, it's
Amarantha De Cruz.
Yeah.
Sorry, I did that last week too, didn't I?
I can appreciate this because I've had my names like misspelled and mispronounced. It's like oddly enough over the years. I'm sympathetic.
Thank you. Well, no, it's just that it makes a difference, like geographically where you're from. Oh. De La Cruz is Hispanic. Like Spaniard ancestry, and I'm Brazilian. So Da Cruz is Portuguese, like descendant. So
there you go.
Brazilian.
Thank you.
We always learn something here on Ground Floor Theater. Let's introduce the other people that are here with us. We have Brian Cheslick. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
And we have Lemon here with us from Ground Floor Theater's production of The Last 5 Years. And I should explain that Lemon is deaf and Brian is actually interpreting for her, so he will be voicing anything she says. Welcome, Lemon.
Hello.
There you go. That was great. As we go, especially when we interview, talking about the last 5 years, that pause between the question and the answer will always happen because we're doing interpretation.
Live radio.
So that song that we heard coming in was Irene Cara from the movie Fame, and she passed away this week.
Yeah, young.
She was 63. She's younger than me, which sort of upsets. But I mean, I was in New York when Fame came out, and that was about the New York acting high school, theater high school. And so her death sort of hit me pretty hard.
Yeah, it was a big deal. I remember being as a young person hearing that song, and it was a catchy song. And it won an Oscar?
I believe it did.
Yeah, and for the film. And it's like, but it was kind of my first exposure, I guess. It's like to theater in that way.
Yep. So we don't, the cause of her death was not announced. They don't know. There was also some wacky, her Wikipedia page age is different from her actual age. Yeah, go ahead, Amaretha.
I know. I was just going to say that her death, I think, hit my generation really hard. I'm in what they call, I guess, elder millennial.
Oh.
in my late 30s.
An EM.
Yeah. And I've been talking to some people like around my age and Gen Xers. And it's so tied to childhood for me. Like my very first memories was Dancing to Fame and Flashdance. And I actually had the karaoke cassette tape.
Oh my!
I remember when I was a kid, you know, and if you ever did theater or any kind of like pageant contest or whatever, if you were a little girl in the 80s and 90s, that was a song, Flashdance, What a Feeling, or Fame. Those were the songs you had to sing. So
yeah, all Irene Cara.
Yeah. It's been actually kind of a warm feeling, like remembering the song Fame, you know, and how they had those songs back then that were like very dramatic with huge arrangements and were meant to, like, you know, make you feel something extra. So anyway.
I want to give Brian a chance if he wants to log in on any of this.
I'm kind of in the same generation as you. I am 41, so a little bit more elder millennial, I guess. And I remember watching that movie growing up. Really, that song and that movie made me want to move to New York to go to that high school.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, my parents refused to let me go.
It's okay. I've actually told it on this story here. When the High School of Performing Arts opened in Houston, I was a sophomore in high school, and I wanted to go. My parents wouldn't let me. Because we
parents,
I know. Because we show how the sausage is made here on the show, Brian, when you talk right into the microphone. There's just no way to do it. So we had a Broadway opening.
Oh,
K-pop opened, and this was K-pop also was I think off Broadway as well. So I'm going to read the Did They Like It synopsis of it. I can't speak this morning. Packed with pulse-pounding new music and electrifying choreography, this original musical explores the relentless discipline, raw talent, and commercial ambition behind the international sensation. As global superstars put everything on the line for a special one-night-only concert, they face struggles both cultural and personal that threaten to dismantle one of the industry's hottest labels, featuring a cast of K-pop and musical theater stars. It's a multimedia experience unlike any other on Broadway. And this has been something they postponed their opening for various reasons. But this was originally done at Ars Nova. And the Did They Like It aggregator had 9 reviews, 4 of which were positive, 1 of which was negative, and 4 that were meh, or middle of the road. So I was expecting it to be all thumbs up, but it wasn't. It does have a book by Jason Kim, and I am reading from, I typically read from the New York Times, but I've been trying to mix it up a little bit, so I'm reading from the Did They Like It reviewer, oh my God, who I my thing doesn't have the name and I forgot who it was, so I apologize. I'm seeing if there's somewhere in here it's got the reviewer's name. It does not, but it was a Did They Like It reviewer. The New York Times was one of the ones that were negative, so I decided to like let them just do their own thing. So it has a book. It's just not a jukebox musical. But one of the things they say is, quote, Jennifer Weber's formula-based, though clever, pop-and-pop choreography with a stylistic assist from assistant choreographer MJ Choi is as fun and catchy as anything Britney Spears ever performed.
It's interesting. It's an interesting concept.
Do you like K-pop? Anybody like K-pop here?
I'm not necessarily a big K-pop fan, but I had a coworker who, early on, she was the first wave, and she told me it's like all about this. It's like, and then next thing you know, it's like it was everywhere.
Yeah,
and all the bands. It's like,
well, I don't know if Psy was the first like major Korean star that I guess kind of started
Gundam style. It's like, yes, it's like the dance craze. Yes, it's interesting. They're big bands. They come through. They're huge. They're starting to play more in like Texas and stuff.
They're
you see
huge.
Them on bills.
And mostly like they're boy bands.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea. It's like to do K-pop and Broadway together and then do an original story as opposed to maybe something.
Which is what this is.
Yeah.
I think it'll actually run for a while. Amarantha or anybody else? Any views on K-pop in general?
I mean, I never really got it. I don't get it. But I know so many people who love it. But even as like a teenager, I was super alternative. I didn't really like boy bands, although I used to go to a lot of gay clubs and they would play. That's where I would hear the boy bands. Like all my gay guy friends were fanatic of, you know, the boy bands of the 90s and aughts. But like everybody else, I mean, we didn't really... But I feel like K-pop kind of transcends that. I don't know. It's just such a wide.
I just love it. It's kind of infectious when you see it. I don't watch a lot of it, but I find it kind of cool.
It's interesting that even though I don't listen to K-pop, I know so much about that band,
BTS.
BTS.
Yeah.
I know everything about them. I've never heard
see,
them.
See, I know everything about BTO.
Oh, yeah. Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Tracy.
I'm a guy of a certain age.
Yeah. By the way, that reporter for Did They Like It was Juan Michael Porter II. Other critics, Broadway News' Brittany Samuels said, quote, K-pop has the most electric original score on Broadway, warping together ambient soundscapes, heart-wrenching ballads, and those signature reverberating beats. Luna, in particular, belts out most of the show's more dramatic and a cappella numbers and handles the task with ease. The New York Times, Jesse Green, who didn't really like it, he was the thumbs down. He says, in its remaking for Broadway, I wish K-pop had preserved more moments that allow you to consider what the excitement of K-pop, for those who feel it, and the expressiveness of American musical theater, likewise, can profitably say to each other. And finally, Vulture's Jackson McHenry said, a winning ensemble, melodies that sneak into your ears and stay there, and rhythm perfect choreography. So,
well, this could be a first. It's like with this type of genre of music and this type of subject matter, it could be the thing that a year or two from now is the next In the Heights or what have you. So
true. There was another show that opened off Broadway called The Get, and I tagged it because it was kind of interesting. The headline says, The Get Review, Jewish History and a Woman's Future. People of Jewish faith are really in the news these days because of all the anti-Semitic actions that are going on. And then we also have, oh my God, I forgot the name of it, on Broadway right now. But a lot of stuff around the Jewish experience. And this talks about... A get, G-E-T-T, is when an Orthodox Jewish woman wants a divorce. She has to be allowed it by her husband, and that's called a get, which is interesting. And it's basically a one-person show, or actually it's a couple-person show. It's written by Liba Weinbergs, and they call it an off-kilter play about life after divorce. So the lead character, Ida, is invited to, is going to a friend's house and gets stuck in an elevator with a person. It says, gets stuck in an elevator with a guy who is smoldering hot despite his penchant for magic tricks. So it's saying that one doesn't typically go with the other. So I thought that was interesting. She called it an unbalanced dynamic. So it didn't seem like a terribly wonderful review. And now my computer is moving all of the little lines that I computer-y wrote to different places. So I have no idea what I want to say. But you can see the link to the review at offstageonair.com. But it looked interesting. And so now I want to change the subject because I know this is something that Brian Cheslick will be interested in and probably Lemon as well. We talked on the show a while back about the sign language interpreter that got fired from Lion King because he was white and the ASL interpreters for a color that is for a show that is mostly actors of color should be also a person of color. He sued for reverse discrimination, and that caused a huge backlash all over the place on both sides and from both camps. There were people from the deaf community that supported him. There were people from the deaf community that vilified him. But it finally settled for an undisclosed amount. I don't know what that means. So we don't really know what the final thing was. As it was explained to me, this was not a person that was working for the Lion King for a long time. He was part of a service of ASL interpreters, was assigned to work for the Lion King. And then after it got assigned, the person said, oh my God, shouldn't assign this person to this show. Let's ask him and another interpreter to step back so that a person of color, and he took offense. And Brian, I'm just curious from your standpoint, because last week we played, or 2 weeks ago, we played your response to it on air. You certainly did not side with the gentleman who was playing the suit. And now that it's been, what's the word? I just lost it. I just said it.
Settled.
Thank you. Have your feelings altered or changed at all?
No, actually, my feelings have become even more passionate because that interpreter posted a video response explaining that him and Theater Development Fund have settled the situation and all is hunky-dory and good. He made comments hiding behind his BIPOC wife, which basically reeked of tokenism.
Yeah.
And then he talked about how, wow, I really see the hurt in our deaf community. Well, number one, he is not deaf himself. So I have issues when he says our deaf community. Yes, he is a CODA. His parents are deaf, but he still will never understand what it is like to be a deaf person. And also, just to clarify for your listeners, even though I am interpreting for Lemon, I am deaf myself. So I just want to make that clear.
Yeah, I guess we should say that. And while we're stopped here, what is a CODA?
A CODA is a child of a deaf adult. So their parents are deaf. In addition, like he mentioned how, you know, he sees the hurt in the community, but he made no mention or taking responsibility of the fact that he's the one who caused that hurt.
Right. Mm. Yeah. But that responsibility, that participation in the things that...
And then he goes on to talk about how, this really sparks some really important discussion that we need to have. However, he is blocking and deleting all comments on social media that speak out against him and only keeping the ones that are supporting him, essentially silencing deaf voices, silencing the opposition, and trying to control that dialogue that is happening within our community.
Right. I found it interesting that evidently there's argument on both sides. I actually fall on your side of the argument. We should say, by the way, his name is Keith Wan, and he was the one that did it. Part of me gets upset because they settle. And if it was a matter, it means he got money to drop the suit, one would assume. And
yeah.
And it kind of upsets me that this didn't get, because there's so many people on both sides, it never got a hearing. So it was never really adjudicated in any way, fashion. And so I think worse of him because he goes, okay, I'll settle for however much money that they're giving me.
Yeah, because it's like, talking about having this important conversation about tricky stuff, the conversation is cut off. And so it's there's an opportunity here, but I don't know if we'll have that because things have resolved quickly. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I don't know that we'll ever, I don't know that any movement will happen on either side. But the idea of reverse racism sort of gets me a little upset. And I should say before I say this that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not that of the radio station co-op, its board of directors, or its staff. It's just our opinion. I don't know. I reverse racism, in my opinion, is not a thing.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
So the last thing I want to talk about, which is also deaf related, is there was an article in Variety, and it says, despite the success of CODA, which was the movie, and it references a child of deaf adults, a study finds a deaf community rarely or never sees itself reflected on the screen. Now, I unfortunately, I had some things happening today. I was not able to really read this article, but based on the headlines, I get it. And Brian is here and Lemon is here. So I want to talk about that. You know, the world at large sort of got an idea of the deaf community through that movie, CODA, which was wildly popular. But we're still not where we want to be with regards to representation. So, Brian, I just wanted to get your take on that. And, Lemon, you feel free to chime in.
I have mixed feelings. The movie was a good movie.
Yeah.
I know it was successful. It opened some eyes for people. At the same time, the director was hearing. So it is hard to avoid the fact that the movie itself is told from a hearing person's perspective.
Yeah.
Which always can be problematic. I always advocate for a deaf co-director, deaf consultants, to make sure that there is authenticity within what is happening. I'm not really sure about the writers of the movie, if they're deaf or hearing. One would assume they're probably hearing, because typically most deaf writers, deaf directors, deaf behind-the-scenes people don't get those opportunities the same as hearing people.
You don't think it might have been written by a CODA themselves? Don't know. I don't know either. That's interesting. But, you know, that's been a problem throughout the ages. Most, you know, things in our current and recent past and long past in this country have been written by white men, hearing, able, straight white men across the board. So that's kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at, what is it? Call Me By Your Name, which is a queer movie about two gay men. And it won awards. I think it won like Best Picture, everything, written by a cis white straight male.
I think that's changing little by little. I mean, that's, you know, there's some great shows out there. Scottsboro Boys for one, Memphis for another, that are great shows, but they're written from voices that aren't of that experience. And Scottsboro Boys is written by Kander and Ebb, and it's about minstrel shows, and Memphis is written by Joe DiPietro, who's a white man, and it's really about, actually that show's kind of a white savior show, but that's a whole nother thing.
I was looking up something just now about CODA, the movie, from, and the Hearing Loss Association of America talks about how film director Larry Gutterman experiences severe hearing loss, but they don't necessarily talk about what his, you know, it's not officially.
So he's hard of, he is hard of hearing.
So there's something there, but it's again, kind of speaking to what we were talking about. Okay. It's not the same.
Yeah. I was also looking up, movies of the subject, and, gosh, there really isn't that much, like at least from this very quick research. The only movie here that I'm familiar with that was a huge blockbuster was Mr. Holland's Opus. That came out in 1995.
Right. And then, well, we are starting to get representation, like Sandra May Frank is in New Amsterdam. And I think it makes a difference when you start seeing these characters show up in minor roles or even major roles, and that it's not so that the movie itself or the show itself is not about deafness or blackness, but they are there representing, and that's when we kind of quote and normalize is not the right word, but it started to enjoy things more in the mainstream. Unfortunately, we have to move on.
Right. Yeah, there's more I could talk about.
Yeah, we could talk forever, and we're running late. I was worried we wouldn't have enough stuff to talk about, but I do want to talk about one other thing, that there was an auction of memorabilia from different things Broadway Cares, Equity Fights, AIDS, where Hugh Jackman's hat from The Music Man went on auction, and it was bought by
Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman,
oh,
thank you.
Okay.
At this auction, and the auction was like, there was bidding, and it got up to 19,000, and she finally just said 100,000, and she bought the hat.
Wow.
I know. Pretty amazing.
That's a story.
So let's go out with a little bit of The Music Man. Let's hear Hugh sing You Got Trouble, and then we'll come back with our guests from Ground Floor Theater.
You got 1, 2, 3, 4.
We
five,
are back.
Six,
you're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and
Tracy Schultz
and
Amarantha.
What's your last name?
De Cruz.
Yeah, I just wanted to go out there so that we all knew.
You had to
what
think
it
about
was.
It for a second.
It's De Cruz Negron.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like,
oh, De Cruz Negron.
Second guessing.
But I didn't have that part.
I don't use the Negron because Americans can't pronounce it.
I can. Okay.
We are terrible.
We are here with Ground Floor Theater. This is a theater company well known to Offstage and On the Air. And for full transparency, it is a theater that I run. And this particular show is one that I am co-directing with my guest here, Brian Cheslick. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I say welcome back, but have you been on the show before?
Yes, I was actually on the show pre-COVID when you and I co-directed the award-winning production of Next to Normal.
Well, that's what I thought. But then I got confused because you kept asking me the address. And I wanted to say, you were here before. Anyway, we also have one of the stars from Next to Normal here with us, Lemon, who plays the role.
We have
of
one of the stars from the last 5 years.
Oh, the last 5 years. That's your fault. Thank you. Lemon, welcome, Lemon.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. I am one of the directors, but I'm going to try to keep that hat off, and basically we'll talk to Brian as a director of the show. So tell us about the last 5 years. What is it? How are y'all doing it? Or how are we doing it? Let's be honest.
Well, the last 5 years is a two-person musical written by Jason Robert Brown about a relationship between a man and a woman. It's been said that it is autobiographical of Jason Robert Brown. It is all music, and they take turns with each song. And the interesting thing is that they actually start from different time periods in their relationship. The character of Kathy, who is played by Lemon, she actually starts from the end of the relationship with the breakup, and then she works her way backwards, whereas Jamie, her boyfriend slash husband at one point in the show, starts from the first date and works his way forward. And in their timeline, they are moving in opposite directions, and the only time when they are actually in the same time of their relationship together is when they get married, and then they continue on in the opposite direction in the timeline of their love breakup turmoil that we all know about.
Well, that's amazing. You say it's a two-hander, and yet the cast is four people. Can you explain to people how we are using our four-person cast in this show?
Well, as you can probably tell with me voicing for Lemon, Lemon is deaf, so she uses American Sign Language. So the character of Kathy is identified as a deaf character, so she is signing all of her songs in American Sign Language, with the vocal acting being performed by Carolyn
O'Brien.
Thank you. And then for Jamie, our actor for Jamie is John...
Christopher.
Thank you. And he identifies as hearing. And then to provide the ASL aspect, we have ASL interpreter Saul Lopez, who is actually, in this production, an ASL performer, not an ASL interpreter. So Carolyn and Saul are basically kind of their inner monologue, I'm going to say this wrong because I'm a deaf person and this is a really hard word to say, omnipresence.
They're omnipresent, right? Yes.
Yes. score for me. That's how I got my PhD, and that I just earned it that way.
Yes, forgive me. I should have introduced you as Dr. Brian Cheslick.
Yeah, it's okay.
So, you know, typical to what Ground Floor Theater does is we try not to do everything that's just the way, if we made it just a deaf story with voiced, not interpretation, but voices. Our interpreters, voiced and ASL, are part of the story, part of the characters. Lemon, how has this process been for you? And tell folks a little bit about what it takes to translate what is spoken English into ASL so that it can be understood by a deaf audience.
The translation process is challenging for sure. I appreciate the fact that we have a director of ASL, Sandra May Frank. She helped a lot with the translations. Whenever I actually listen to the music and learn the music, and I absorb that, I listen to the English, and the English is actually in my head, and then I actually translate it to ASL. But some sentences you have to kind of switch them back and forth to make sure it makes sense for the audience. It's a really grueling process at first, but once you get used to it toward the end, the last little bit, it becomes a lot easier to do.
So I've been watching you do this process for the past month and have watched you, at least as I've observed it, become more comfortable and having a little bit more fun with the role. So I understand and I can see how much work goes into it, but once you start to get it and get it into your bones, do you enjoy the process of being able to perform in this way?
Oh, yes. I like challenges. It helps me grow. So, yeah, I've enjoyed it.
You're a dancer.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, before I met you, I looked you up on the internet, and I thought you had studied dance for many years. Is that right? Or am I wrong?
Yes, I grew up dancing. I danced before I became an actor.
Yeah, so I find that cool as a hearing person, and I'm sure you've gotten this, and, we don't always know the right questions to ask. Oftentimes we ask the wrong things. I've heard time and time again when a deaf person gets out of a car, people say, oh my God, I can't believe you can drive, you're deaf. And I think for a hearing person, a lot of people would say, oh my God, you're deaf, how do you dance? So what would your answer be to that?
My family is all deaf. My parents, my sisters, the whole house, we are deaf and we sign. I'm the only one that can use hearing aids. I can speak. My family doesn't. I do enjoy music. My family doesn't. So I took advantage of that in the house. I played loud music. I danced around. I loved tap dancing. My parents can't hear that, so I just went ahead and tapped around and did whatever I wanted to do.
That's amazing. Well, back to the show. Kathy is an interesting character. Do you relate to her in any way yourself?
Yes. For one, I am a struggling actor, just like Kathy is. I've gone through a rough breakup, just like Kathy.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of things that people can relate to with that. Brian, you are also the artistic director of Deaf Austin Theater, who's co-producing this show with Ground Floor Theater. Tell folks again, remind them about Deaf Austin Theater and what you have been doing and what you are going to be doing.
Well, Deaf Austin Theater is a nonprofit theater company here in Austin that produces shows in American Sign Language, both original and published, in order to make more theatrical experiences accessible to the deaf and hard of hearing community, especially the signing community. we've done Next to Normal with the fabulous Ground Floor Theater and Lisa Schatz.
Fabulous.
And then after that, unfortunately, we were on a, you know, an incline rocketing to success. And then obviously, like everything else, COVID kind of put a kink in that. So we had to switch to online programming. We hosted a short play festival where we had six new works written by deaf playwrights performed all over.
Which was nominated for a lot of Beyond Pain Awards.
Yes. And we also went through with Broadway HD and got to their top five. And we were shown, one of our performances were shown on the Emmys online portal.
Oh, I did not know that. That's neat.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then after we finish up with this beautiful production of the last 5 years, I will be co-directing a collaborative production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella with the Zach Scott Theater, which opens January the 25th and runs through March the 5th, which will also feature a mixture of deaf, hearing, and hard of hearing actors as well.
That's amazing. And you can probably get information about Cinderella at zachtheater.org. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that production. So
you can also go to deafaustintheater.org for information on both the last 5 years, Cinderella, as well as our future productions as well.
That's true. Well, great. Thank you for being on the show. I should say that the show opens this Friday, December 2nd, closes on December 18th. You've got 3 weeks to see the show. You can get more information at deafaustintheater.org or groundfloortheater.org. And it's a great Christmas opportunity. Yeah. So thank you all for being on the show. Lemon, I'm so proud to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Awesome. Well, that was Brian Cheslick, Chrissy Lemon, Lemon, and me, all from Ground Floor Theater and Deaf Austin Theater's production of The Last 5 Years, playing December 2nd through December 18th at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, deafaustintheater.org or groundfloortheater.org. And we'll go away with a song from the show, from the Broadway show. And this is Summer in Ohio, which I just have to say, watching Lemon do that number is just so much fun. So here is Summer in Ohio.
After dark, take a carriage ride through Central Park. But it
we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Tracy. Oh my God, don't tell me. Amarantha and Brian, we had a great talk about the last 5 years. And now we're going to switch to the way off Broadway players, way up in Leander. And we have Andrea Littlefield on the line. Andrea, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you're there. Technology works.
Awesome.
Sometimes.
But it's working right now. So we're happy to have you join us. You joined us kind of at the last minute because we had a last minute cancellation. And you're doing a reading of what's the name of it?
It's called A Christmas Carol.
A Christmas Carol.
I've heard of it.
It's
one of those white savior plays.
Yeah, well, you've been listening. So you're doing it, and this is the Way Off Broadway Players, which we have not had on the show in a long, long time.
Oh, you haven't? Oh. Well, so, we're celebrating our 25th season this year.
My gosh, that's almost as old as I am. So tell us about this reading.
Yes, so we're doing A Christmas Carol. It's been adapted by Mark Torres, who is a friend of mine from Maine. And we're doing it in a reader's theater style. So really the only person who has a role throughout is the person who plays Scrooge. So he plays Scrooge throughout, and everybody else plays a lot of different characters.
Cool. And I'm assuming this is the, you know, everybody knows Christmas Carol. Or I would assume everybody knows Christmas Carol. Are we doing it in period? Are we doing it basically as Dickens wrote it?
Yes. The adaptation is really close to as it was written. Folks will be using British accents. They'll be in period type clothing or as good as we can get in Texas in the winter.
Got it. And what is your position with the play?
I am the director.
You're directing it. Wonderful.
Yes.
And so can you tell us a little bit about this production? Who's in it? What are, you know, some of the things you'd like to highlight?
Sure. So Kurt Olsen is playing Ebenezer Scrooge. He has played Scrooge many times in the past and loves doing it, and came into rehearsals with his mutton chops already in place, so that was great. And then there's a 10-person ensemble who, like I said, plays a lot of different characters. So we have one person who plays the ghosts of Christmas past, one for the present, and one for the future, and the Cratchits. And so you'll know all the characters.
What about Tiny Tim? Is he there?
Tiny Tim is there too, yes. And you know what? He doesn't die at the end. So,
oh,
that was a spoiler. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was a spoiler. Speaking of that, and this is completely off topic, the show And Juliet, I was listening to a podcast today, and and those of you that are listening to the show know that Anne Juliet is a new production on Broadway that supposes if Juliet did not take poison or kill herself after she discovered the dead Romeo. But evidently, this guy, and I'm just going to do exactly, well, I'm not, never mind. He said, spoiler alert, and then he immediately spoiled the show with something that's kind of interesting. Anyway, so I'm not going to do it. there is something interesting about Anne Juliet. That is a wonderful. Tell us about the Way Off Broadway Players, since we haven't had you guys on for a while. Have you been with the organization for a long time?
So I did a Midsummer Night's Dream with them a couple summers ago.
Was it a Midsummer Night?
I live a Midsummer Night's Dream, yes. And I live nearby. I live in Round Rock, so I have, you know, been familiar with them. I was on their board for a brief time, but I would say that Way Off Broadway was one of the issues during COVID. They lost their space, so they've been kind of doing pop-up theater for the last couple of years, outside in a lot of cases, at Leandersal Distilling sometimes. We actually are really excited because we just got a building. So
we're
in the middle of... Thank you. We're in the middle of working with an architect and getting all the permits in place, so hopefully we'll have that place open in the spring.
Well, that is huge news, especially here. We have such space problems.
Yeah, Christmas came early.
It is. So this particular performance will be at the Leander Activity Center, which is out on Baghdad Road, and we open on Saturday, December 10th at 7:30. And then have a performance on Sunday, a matinee, and then the following weekend, Friday, two shows on Saturday and one on Sunday.
Do you know the date of the closing?
The closing is the 18th at 3 p.m.
Wonderful. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can folks go to get information about your production?
Yes, they can go to our website at wobcp.org.
W-O-B-C-T.
P, as in players.
Okay, dot org.
Way Sorry. Off Broadway Community Players. Right. .org.
Wonderful. Well, best of luck on the production. And
Thank
I look forward
so
to
much.
Seeing the new space when it opens.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Wonderful. That was Andrea Littlefield of the Way Off Broadway Community Players and their production of... I just lost it again.
A Christmas Carol.
playing at the Leander Activity Center from the 10th of December through the 18th of December. For more information, wobcp.org. And since we had a last minute change of people, I'm going to play the song that we were going to play after the other show, which is Street Corner Arts, The Gulf, which is opening this Friday and plays through the 17th, streetcornerarts.org to see it. So we're going to play I Went Fishing With My Dad. Here it is. We'll be back.
I went fishing with my dad.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air. And we've been having such a lovely time. And it was really great for Amanda. I keep wanting to call her Amanda. For Andrea to step in at the last minute and talk about A Christmas Carol, Way Out in Leander. Way Out in Leander.
I need to go out that way.
And it's not way out for some people. A lot of people live up north. But I'm looking forward to that. So talking about the local stuff that's going on, the guest that was not able to come was Street Corner Arts, The Gulf, which is going to be opening at Hyde Park on the 2nd, which is this coming Friday. It is directed by Carlo Lorenzo Garcia, and it is starring Natalie Garcia and I have to look up the other person. Natalie and Carlo were to be our guests today, but they were not able to make it. But anyway, more information can be found at streetcornerarts.org. And let's talk about the other goings on in Austin. I wanted to call out Frostbites, a holiday cabaret done by the Archive Theater from December 2nd to December 17th. And it is what it says. It's a cabaret, holiday themed. You can get information at thealchemytheater.org and see all of that stuff. Other things that are playing here in town, I'll just go through my list. We just talked about The Gulf. We also have Cenicientia, which is Glass Half Full, and Zach Theaters playing through December 3rd. The one-act play That Goes Wrong at Austin Playhouse through the 18th. Faith Healer, who was on our show a few weeks ago, City Theater, December 8th. Sherlock Holmes of the Archive Theater is playing through the 18th. And A Christmas Carol at Zach Theater playing through the 21st. Water by the Spoonful at different stages at the Vortex. You have one more weekend to see it. It closes on the 3rd. And finally, Junie B. Jones, Jingle Bells, Batman Smells is at the Scottish Rite through the 18th. So that is stuff to see. Now we'll jump on to Today in Theater History. Y'all ready for this?
Today in Theater History.
Yay, I haven't heard that in so long.
As Nicole Sherrill would say.
Nicole has not been here very often, so it's good to hear. But some interesting things. One of the things that Playbill does, which is where I'm getting my information, in their vault, they always do what they call Today in Theater History, things that are happening tonight. Which is Between Riverside and Crazy begins its previews tonight at the Helen Hayes Theater. Other things that opened at this time is The Collaboration. No, that's beginning previews tonight. That hasn't happened yet. And The Collaboration is it's an Andy Warhol themed show.
Interesting. I did not hear about that one.
Seussical the Musical opened in 2000.
Okay. That turned out to be a big deal.
It did?
Well, yeah. As among my friends. It's yeah. Like they were big Dr. Seuss fans.
Me too. I mean, it's a cute show. Have you seen it before?
I have not seen it. I have yet to see it.
No, it's not really my flavor. That, SpongeBob, none of those.
Yeah.
I've never seen any kind of SpongeBob at all, but I've just heard nothing but wonderful things about the show. And I will see it when I get a chance to see it. I have not seen it yet. Also opening on this date in 1955 is Pipe Dream, which is not the Pipe Dream that you think is not the straight play that was from a few seasons ago, but it is a musical, a Rodgers and Hart or Rodgers and Hammerstein musical. I don't remember. We're going to hear a little bit of it in a second. The Parisian One opened in 2017, and The Creation of the World and Other Business opened in 1972. Birthdays today, Robert Guillaume, which people may know him as Benson.
Yeah. I did not realize that's how he pronounced his last name.
I may have butchered his last name, yeah. But I think it's close. Mandy Patinkin.
Of course.
Which I just watched in The Princess Bride the other day.
Classic.
I just saw him in Secret Garden when I was in middle school.
Oh, okay. The Parisian, I already said that. David Lindsay Abair is his birthday. And then, of course, it's the playwright who shall not be named's birthday as well.
The playwright who shall not be named?
David Mamet.
He's not named now?
He's not named. He's been canceled.
Oh, all right. Okay. I did not realize.
Yeah, so... Well, unless I've got my people confused. Do I have my people confused?
I confused.
I'm sure I'll get an email.
I confused the playwright that should not be named to the play that should not be named because it's like you're not supposed to say Macbeth, right?
You're not supposed to say Macbeth in a theater, but some people do.
Yeah, okay. I also Lisa thought does. Shakespeare for some reason.
Yeah,
Macbeth. That was like, that's where my brain birthday? Went.
Yeah,
okay. Lisa said Macbeth in the theater the other night.
I believe they said it three times.
Is that the extra special good luck?
No, it's bad luck. The whole superstition is you can't say Macbeth in the theater.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I say that I'm not superstitious, and yet I do have some superstitious things. So I own my hypocrisy. Thank you. My gosh, it's not easy. I need a PhD here to correct me. Yes.
A deaf PhD.
Well, I don't think that has any bearing on your smartness.
That makes it extra special.
Exactly.
Yep. So we have an extra 3 minutes. If there's anything that you guys want to talk about theater related openly.
Well, I'm curious about your superstitions. Like, what is it that you do or don't do?
Well, I do keep a ghost light in the theater.
Okay.
And the ghost light is that usually a bare bulby kind of light that sits in the middle of the stage that when everything is off, the ghost light is on. There are a lot of superstitions about and theories about why it exists. My theory is it's basically to keep the janitors from falling into the pit when they're cleaning the stage late at night. But I do have we have a ghost light.
Ground floor theater has janitors that clean the theater at night.
Yeah. Her name is Lisa Schiff.
And an orchestra pit, which is also, I did not know.
Well, it's there in spirit.
Okay. All right.
It's an orchestra pit on the same level as the stage.
But I have heard of this, and that makes sense.
There are other superstitions that I don't necessarily abide to, but I don't know if I've talked about them on the show. But it's also considered bad luck to whistle in a theater.
Oh.
But that is based on something factual. Because when theater first started and we started having ropes and things like that, most of the people, the technicians that ran the theater, were mariners. They were off the boats. And they communicate by a series of whistles. So you could come out whistling on the stage and a sandbag would fall on your head because some guy heard a thing that he...
What he thought was a command.
Yeah. And I believe the superstition around Macbeth, and people call it
The Scottish play.
Yeah. I believe it is based on a series of productions of Macbeth that we just had a lot of problems in a condensed time frame together, so they decided it was just bad luck.
What else is there? No mirrors on the stage and no peacock feathers.
Yeah, I don't know what any of those are.
Wow, that's new to me.
Yep.
But also, one of the things, this is not a superstition, but you know, we say break a leg when we mean good luck, and there's so many theories about where that came from. And what I thought it was, or one of the ones that I sort of held on to, was that it came from John Wilkes Booth, who, after shooting Abraham Lincoln, jumped off the balcony and he broke his leg.
Oh.
And I thought it was one of those, break a leg. But you know what? I've been told that it came from this, and I like this better. So when an actor comes on stage, in a proscenium stage, a flat stage, they have curtains that on the sides, they're called legs. And when you break the leg, you pull the leg across and walk onto stage. So that's breaking a leg. I kind of like that one.
That one sounds great. I like that. That feels cool.
In deaf theater, we don't say break a leg. We say break fingers.
Okay.
Break finger.
Really?
And what's the sign for that?
Break fingers.
So for my hearing audience and anybody else who can't see this, breaking is two fists together. Does it come across part? And fingers are just wiggling fingers.
Almost like you're going to break the celery in half.
Yeah.
That's the first sign. And then you just do spirit fingers.
It's like Fosse fingers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jazz hands, as Nicole likes to say.
I like that.
These are jazz hands.
Oh, that's
These are spirit fingers.
This is true.
Slight differences. Differences, though.
People have to look at the YouTube to get what he meant by that. Well, thank you all for joining me on the show. Tracy, thanks for stepping in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
At the very last minute.
Always a pleasure. Always fun to like to be able to do this.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back. You were on. You were like such a staple for so long. And Amarantha De Cruz, thanks again for coming. You can come back any old time.
Thank you. Yeah, I had fun.
And Brian Treslick, I just love having you here.
Well, thank you.
Wonderful. Well, coming up next, as always, is John Hoffner and the Austin Common Radio Hour. He's trying to get up to tell us what's going to happen. Come grab...
Do I need to use sign language here?
Yes,
sign?
You do.
Yes, today we are talking about the future of buildings, transportation, and power, and it's the former general manager of Austin Energy, Roger Wonderful. Duncan, kind of fun. It'll be a good show.
Great. Those rates are going up, everybody.
Yeah, that's going to be the next show, right?
So, plane going out, we're going to play a song from a show called Footballer's Wife, which is in the UK. You can get, I'll have a link to its webpage so you can see what it's all about, but it looks like a lot of fun. This is called Fairy Tales Aren't Just for Fairies. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
You can't catch a fish without a worm for bait. You can't catch a worm if you get up too late. You can't plug a duck unless you sit and wait. And snaring a bear is no snap.